Sheffield Live, made in Sheffield, made by you.
Do you want to get your message heard? With low advertising rates and great sponsorship opportunities, Sheffield Live can help you reach thousands of local people. Get your campaign on Sheffield Live. To find out more about advertising on Sheffield Live, write to advertising@sheffieldlive.org or call 0114 281 4082. Do you like Sheffield Live? Why not become a friend of Sheffield Live? Sheffield Live is a community radio station, and Friends of Sheffield Live are people in the community who make a regular donation to keep Sheffield Live on the air. Join the Friends of Sheffield Live by writing to friends@sheffieldlive.org or go online to sheffieldlive.org/friends.
Sheffield Live, made in Sheffield, made by you.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Dawn? You know what, I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3, here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
The swinging jazz guitar of Django Reinhardt introduces Swing Time, Sheffield Live FM's weekly selection of swing, jazz and blues. The presenters, that's me, Brian,
Mike and John,
offer a mixture from all periods of jazz. So if you have a liking for jazz,
tune into Swing Time every Tuesday from 1 to 3 o'clock.
Remember, it don't mean a thing if it ain't got that swing.
This is Communities Live.
Because at that time the housing was cheaper.
I know it's not a big city centre, but there's still quite a few shops. I quite like it.
Dog and Partridge on Trippitt Lane every other Thursday.
Love the green room just for like acoustic nights.
This is Communities Live.
It's a very big question, isn't it?
We have a diverse society in Sheffield.
I like all the art sculptures.
It's friendly, there's a lot to do.
I really like the Peace Gardens. I like all the little fountains and little areas that you can just sit out and chill in.
Sheffield is a very nice city.
This is Communities Live.
I love Sheffield, yes. Love it. Been here 17 years.
I like Sheffield because the people are very friendly.
This is a large student community, so it makes it like very lively, very vibrant city in that regard, and also very multicultural, no?
And we love the Sheffield people.
Everything, the city, the nature, the outside of Sheffield, it's lovely. Great place.
We'll be right back.
Hello, good afternoon. Welcome to Communities Live here at Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. And we have Jane... what's your second?
Jane McPhillips.
I'm so sorry. I'll start that again. And we have Jane McPhillips. Good afternoon.
Hi, Chris. It's lovely to be here.
So thank you for joining me today. So how are you finding radio so far?
Well, I've been on a couple of radio shows, so this isn't my first, so I feel like I know just a little bit like how I have to hold myself near the microphone, but that's about all I really know. So thank you for welcoming me. I will see how it goes.
You're doing well so far. And I want to say thank you for joining me today. The topic that we want to talk about is neurodiversity. I mean, it's such an interesting topic. So tell us a bit more about neurodiversity to our listeners.
So neurodiversity is an umbrella term that's now used in the general public to understand a banner of certain ways of how our brains work. So neurodiversity can include autism, ADHD, dyslexia, dyspraxia, dyscalculia, and sometimes OCD as well comes into that bracket. But it's a way of helping people to understand, okay, maybe my brain works differently to some other people. And the neurodivergent conversations now are far more wide and broad and, like you say, really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I was talking to you a little bit about it earlier on before the show. And, openly, I've got Asperger's and dyspraxia. And I'll be honest, it took me a while to actually figure out what it was and how to overcome it, really. And I think there's so many stories out there that needs to be told about this. Mm. And, you know, it's every story is interesting, I think.
Oh, I 100% agree. excuse me. My story is that I'm autistic and I have ADHD, but I didn't find out until I was 44, something like that. So quite late in life. And that was following two of my children having a diagnosis. And that often is the pathway. Quite a lot of adults discover after their children having diagnosis and realizing, oh, actually, there's quite a lot of me here in terms of the assessment and understanding. And then parents go on to find out, actually, they too are neurodivergent. So that's been my journey, and really has been, I think you used the word earlier about kind of life-changing. For me, finding out how my brain works has changed my life. Yeah.
I mean, there's a few questions I do want to ask you, but if you don't want to answer them because they're too personal, it's completely fine. I mean, do you know, how did it change your life, finding out your diagnosis?
For me, it was because I'd always struggled with anxiety from when I was maybe, since I can remember thinking, I remember worrying. And as a young person going into secondary school, trying to navigate friendships, then sixth form and university, I would always be the very quiet one. But on the inside, I was just always just trying to manage so much stuff.
Sure.
All the different, like, how am I supposed to be? How am I supposed to talk? How am I supposed to act? How am I supposed to hold my hands? How am I supposed to stand? All these things were going on in my brain all the time. But I didn't have an understanding of why. I just thought that was just how everybody was. And my anxiety really did peak throughout my teenage years. And I spent a lot of the time, I used to just go to the toilet and hide there quite often and have panic attacks. And people just thought that was just who I was, but I hid a lot of it. And then going through adulthood, also had a lot of experiences with anxiety. So when I discovered that diagnosis, it helped me to understand all of those things that I was working so hard to do was making me anxious, because I was trying so hard to get things right that it was making me anxious that I was going to get it wrong.
Yeah.
And then when I understood why I was trying to get everything right and go, oh, okay, actually there are other people that experience this too, and there's a framework of understanding as to why.
Yeah.
It didn't mean that all the anxiety went away, but it helped me to understand it, and so I wasn't trying to control it so hard.
Sure. Irene, I've got a story to tell as well, because I have Asperger's and dyspraxia, as I mentioned before. And, I found out that I had dyspraxia at a very young age. It was my mum that actually found out when I was at school, the early years. It was one of my teachers that said to me that there's something definitely not right here. And I did, like, PE and stuff like that. We did like sports day, and I was struggling to do sports day and that, because my condition of it, I didn't even realise at the time. Mm. It was only because my mum took me to a doctor and she said that I've got dyspraxia and stuff like that. And at first, I didn't know how to accept it. And I'm not trying to be dark, everybody, so forgive me, ladies and gentlemen, but it was a really difficult time for me to hear that as a child and that. And, I didn't make many friends at school and stuff like that. I was bored quite constantly. And I went, and it's only when my life turned around, really, when I went to a place called Autism Plus. I started to be a bit more confident because I did a confidence building course, and they said to me that you've got Asperger's as well. I said, I haven't been officially diagnosed with Asperger's, but they said you've definitely got traits of Asperger's. So they said, so there's definitely something there. And we've been to a couple of doctors just to try and get diagnosed, but we haven't got that far as of yet, but so I'm at the moment, I'm just self-diagnosed as Asperger's. So, but my life turned around when I first came here at Studio, because I got more confidence in meeting people, speaking to people. About 15 years ago, Jane, if I met you before, I wouldn't be talking to you. And it's not because I don't want to talk to you. Mm. It's because I couldn't. I couldn't speak to people. And it's definitely, it was definitely life-changing when I found that. And now, seeing that I have dyspraxia and Asperger's, it's made me who I am. It's made me who I am, because if I didn't, I don't think, if I didn't have these two, oh, I don't like the word disabilities, just say two different conditions, I don't think I'd be the person I am today that I am. And I think it also makes the person you are as well.
Oh, I wholeheartedly agree with that. And I think it's kind of a process to go through, isn't it? That yes. When you understand how your brain works, for a lot of us, it isn't instantly like, oh, and I feel really affirmed and positive about all of this. It's, it's a process of, oh, okay, so my brain works in this way, and that means this and that means that. I mean, one thing that I do in my professional life is I work as a therapist, as a neurodivergent therapist, helping people to understand their neurodiversity.
Sure.
And I see people go through this process that I've been through, and sounds like similar for yourself, is there's a process of understanding, and that takes time.
Yeah.
And then there's a, hopefully, a time where you feel huge acceptance and feeling like, yeah, this is who I am.
Yeah.
And actually, I'm really happy with who I am.
Yeah.
But that isn't straightforward, I think. And I don't know about yourself, but there are still times when I get a bit frustrated with how my brain works. There might be, I sometimes feel frustrated that I get anxious before I'm about to meet somebody. And I'm like, oh, here we go again.
Yeah.
But at least I know why. So I don't feel quite so overwhelmed by it.
Sure.
I might manage that in a different way to maybe how I managed it before. So I think it is, it's not a straightforward line from I understand myself to, oh, and now I'm just happy with who I am. However, it sounds like from both of our experiences, it's been really affirming and now feel really comfortable with who we are.
Yeah. I mean, it took me a good while to actually love myself, really, because, I mean, I was struggling, and I was struggling really hard. And like I say, I was ignorant to the time, at it at one time, because I always said that if there was a cure of it, I would take it. But and I'm not saying, but honestly, it's when you see it as when I see it now, it's not really a bad thing. Mm. It's not a bad thing at all. I think, like I say, it's actually helped me find me. Really, it took me a longer time, but I actually found myself and know where I actually am now, and I've actually woken up to my real potential now. And it's also, and it, you know, it's like you say, it's life changing for many people. And I'd recommend going on this journey if people are not so sure about whether you've got Asperger's or anything with neurodiversity. I suggest going for it, because it can be a game changer. Mm. It really can be. Mm.
I can hear that from you. It's actually really moving to hear you say that, Chris. And I wonder also, do you think part of what's helped you is to find the right environments that has allowed you to thrive and be more of who you are? Because I think that's a part of it that I see, not only for myself, but for others. Like, it's finding the place where you can be more yourself.
That has helped in a way. I mean, it took me, like I say, it took me a good while to actually speak to people. Mm. I mean, at one point, I wouldn't even speak at all. I mean, I wouldn't even speak to my own mum and dad at times. I'm just more, I always kept myself closed off, or I was always in my room being self-isolated and stuff like that. And it's not because I didn't want to mix with people, it's because I couldn't mix with people. I wasn't confident enough. Mm. But now I'm more outgoing, I'm more talkative to people, and you know, I mean, I've got an extraordinary job right here.
You have, for sure.
You know, I mean, it's honestly, it's one of the best jobs I've ever done, and the people you get to meet as well is fantastic. I mean, and it's a once in a lifetime opportunity. And you know what the real shame is that unfortunately now, would it have happened today for anybody else? I don't think it would, unfortunately. And the reason why I say that is because radio jobs are too few and too far in between. Mm. And for someone to get a lucky break into that, it's quite rare, unfortunately. And it's a shame because I think there is a lot of potential out there. And there's a lot of people who've got different skills and there's a lot of potential out there. And we just need that lucky break, really.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And how brilliant that you were given that lucky break. And it sounds like you're now giving that to other people too.
Well, that's it. I mean, that's what I mean. I think a lot of people deserve a lucky break. And it's also, there's a lot of stories out there who are waiting to be told. Yeah. It's just finding them and also giving them the opportunity. Mm. Because there's so much potential you can talk about on radio.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, I mean, I've told you my story before. It's like, before I came here, I mean, I was a nervous wreck. I mean, I didn't have any radio skills. I wasn't even trained to be a radio presenter. And they said to me, I was doing I was at a job club called Disability Sheffield. And I was there for a few weeks and I was looking at different jobs. And I could not find anything. I mean, I was looking at like jobs like CEX or game and stuff like that, or something with computers and stuff like that. And a lot of things were very, when you read it with descriptions, it was very worded. It's too hard to understand what they actually wanted from you. And I thought, no, I don't want to do this, don't want to do that. And it weren't a case that I didn't want to do anything. It was just a case of I didn't know what to do. So my advisor sat down with me. I've told you the story before. And she said to me, what is it you really want to do, Chris? And I says, well, I'm probably living in dreamland right now, but it says, I've always wanted to do something in media or computers or IT, stuff like that. And I says, I know I'm not being realistic, but we said, but that's what I want to do. And she said, stop right there. I said, I know just a place for you. And I met, and I came here, we had a meeting with Paul Gregory, he comes here, he used to do Commuters Live, I don't know if he still does on Fridays, and had a meeting, it was a good meeting, just spoke mainly about what I like to do and stuff like that, and he said, I'll see you next Monday. So I went to him next Monday, and I thought, don't expect too much. Probably make cups of coffee, like produce news stories, clean equipment, you know, stuff like that. You know, be a runner. You know, learn the ropes and stuff like that. And first day, Andrew, who I met on the Monday, did Commuters Live on the Monday. And he said, do you want to do a show with me? And I thought, what? And he says, oh, come on, you can do it, you can do it. And he says, go on, man, let's give it a try. And I was shaking. My heart was beating 10 to the dozen. And after that, the rest is history.
And here you are.
And here I am. And you know what? To give people opportunities like this, it's an honour for me. Because, like I said, there's a lot of people out there who've got potential, and we need to get it out there. We definitely need to get it out there more.
And like you say, stories. We are storytellers as human beings. It's
definitely
nice to be able to tell stories, to share stories, and to hear other people's stories, because then, oh, there's just something about, oh, okay, you hear something in that story that helps you to understand you or inspires you in some way or helps you to make sense of something.
Yeah.
And what a great place to be able to talk about those things. And Sheffield's got a lot of stories.
Oh, definitely. There's thousands of, well, hundreds of thousands of stories out there just waiting to be told. We're just going to find them. I want to ask you, Jane, I mean, for anybody that's listening to this, and they're thinking about getting a diagnosis, what advice would you give to our listeners?
Yeah, that's a good question, Chris. I think it's quite a difficult pathway for a lot of people, partly because the NHS has long waiting lists.
Yes.
So I would start with thinking about Okay, what is it that you've identified as being an element of neurodiversity that you'd like to understand more about yourself? And then go with some information prepared for when you then go and see your GP. Some GPs are amazing. They understand a lot about neurodiversity. Yeah. Some haven't had the full training. And so the GPs really are the gatekeepers to you then going to have an assessment.
Yeah.
So I often talk to people about go in with things written down about why you feel as though an assessment would be helpful.
Yeah.
I'll never forget the first time we went in for, I sat with my daughter because we wanted to help her to go for an autism assessment. And she'd gone through the whole of school not understanding her neurodiversity. We didn't know, but she'd had a very stressful time.
Yeah.
And I remember the GP turning to her and saying, but you've got through school, so what's the point? And that kind of response, again, I don't want to point blame at that GP. It's just through lack of understanding.
Yep.
But there's so much point to understanding. And so I always say to people, if you think you're wanting to go for that conversation, have it all written down. Because often a neurodivergent brain, when asked certain questions, will freeze, won't know what to say. And then we walk out. That 5 minutes has been and gone. Our opportunity is done. That gatekeeping is like gate closed.
Yes.
Whereas if you can go in and go, right, I know that I understand these things about myself. And from maybe some research, I can see that there are these elements of neurodiversity. There's some online self-assessment forms that are really simple that you can just go through so that you can think, okay, I'm ticking a certain number of boxes here.
Yeah. Do you think it's also, thank you for sharing that with me. I mean, I really appreciate it. I mean, do you think it's also, I don't think the GP understands that it's not just finding out who you are. It's like unlocking a part of an identity for you.
Yeah.
And that's the key, isn't it? That is the main part.
Mm.
And to say that, what's the point? That's like taking away what is right for you, really.
Yeah, exactly. It is our identity. And some people, when having that diagnosis, you know, that opens up another whole, you know, stuff to kind of look at. And not everybody wants to have a label. And I totally respect that too. It's what's right for that person. But if what feels right for that person is, I would like to understand if actually looking through this lens really helps me to understand myself, then we shouldn't be holding back from people having that opportunity, because then so much more becomes available to us. Because my belief, and certainly from my experience and from working with clients who are neurodivergent and my own children, is that when you understand who you are, you're then more likely to choose the job that works for you, help your relationships work for you, how you socialize, how you do so much of life.
Yes.
And then you can find and build the life that is designed for you, rather than trying to put a square peg into a round hole.
Yes.
So, you know, you kind of want to be able to say to, again, I don't want to point the finger at the GPs, it just happens to be them that the gatekeepers for this part of the of the process, is there's so much that it can help with, but kind of the narrow understanding is almost like, well, if you've got through school, do you need to know? Well, actually, because much of life...
You do, yeah.
Yes, we do need to know. I mean, for me, I remember literally being in the assessment, and up until the point when she actually said, yes, the necessary for being autistic and having ADHD. She'd literally been ticking every box all the way through. And until she said that, I thought she's going to say, no, you're not. And I'm just going to fall apart.
Yes.
I was still waiting for those words.
Yeah.
And when I did, it took me quite a long time to still believe that it was true, because I'd been waiting for so long to hear those words. But it's very difficult to convey that to somebody that maybe doesn't have that experience.
I mean, at first, like I said before, I was, not say ignorant to it. I mean, at first I was struggling to accept it, that I had a disability. I was struggling really hard with it, and when I was young. But like I said before now, because I didn't have a great time at school. I mean, I was constantly bullied all the time, And basically, it was the worst period of my life, really, school. I think, actually, I had more time off school than I had in school. And the thing was that the teachers, unfortunately, were getting frustrated with me. But they weren't helping.
No.
They were not helping because I was getting bullied. And even though I kept telling... there were some teachers I really like, and I do still like them to this day. A lot of teachers saying, like, well, you should attend lessons and stuff like that. Well, what do you expect when you're getting bullied? Yeah. And they weren't helping me. They were getting frustrated with me. And, I mean, I did my GCSEs and I did my best. Mm. I didn't get, like, eight grade A's or B's or like that. I mean, I got D's and E's, but I'm happy with that, really. I mean, a lot of people wouldn't be happy with that, but I'm ecstatic with that, really, with what I've got. And, like I say, I'm not ignorant to the fact... I was ignorant when I was younger, because all I was saying is, like, I want to get rid of this, I can't cope and stuff like that. That's just, and you know, it's an awful thing to say, and it really is. I mean, now when I've actually found out who I am, I've accepted it. And like I said before, I wouldn't be the person I am now if I didn't accept it. And I think also, how do I put it? I mean, when I had dyspraxia, it wasn't very common at the time. It was a rare condition. It was only about 2% of the population. I mean, it's a lot more now. Yeah. But I've never even heard of Asperger's before. I mean, I only found out that I had Asperger's when I was in my late 20s. Mm-hmm. So, and when I found out that I actually had that as well, it kind of unlocked another piece of the puzzle for me. Mm. So I think it's just like putting the puzzle together, really. And again, like I say, I wasn't being negative on everything. So sorry if you feel like I am being negative, but I'm not being negative at all. I'm just trying to tell people my story about what we've been through. And I think everybody's story is different.
Yeah, I agree. I think, and yeah, it's hard to convey the truth and the honesty behind being neurodivergent, but also wanting to say, but I'm accepting of it. But yes, but I'll be totally honest, there are some days when it does frustrate me, because I wish my brain would work in a slightly different way sometimes. But then you kind of come through full circle and you go, well, okay, no, I accept who I am. But it doesn't mean to say that there aren't those challenges that go along with it. Mm. And I think that's where the understanding can help you to navigate some of those challenges.
Yes.
Because before I understood there was a reason why I was having so many challenges, I just used to be forcing myself into, you know, that square peg and round hole constantly.
Yes.
And finding that it didn't do me right, it didn't do me well. Well, in the end, I burnt out and I got really ill.
I mean, what would you like? I mean, if there was any GPs that is listening to this, or any government MPs and stuff like that, I mean, what would you like for them to do? I mean, if it could help with anything in any way, what would you like them to do?
Gosh, that's a good question. So many things. I would really like them to look at the education system. I'd like them to put more resources in the right places.
Yes.
Just to consider, is our education system the right system for everybody? Because I don't believe that it is.
No.
You know, you've been really honest with your experience, Chris. I had a different experience. Like we've just both said, really, there's a lot. Even on the kind of neurodivergent framework, all of us are experiencing things slightly differently, but we have one rigid education system.
Yes.
But there's so many different ways we could all thrive. And I would love it if we could explore more of that creatively. I wish that there was more resources so that when a person goes in to see the GP that says that I'm struggling, there's more information there that can help them to know what to do. Because to put them on a waiting list that's going to take years,
yes,
is not the solution.
No.
And I'm not saying I have all the answers, but I just wish there was more resource that could allow for people to explore. I don't know, maybe that's going to be educated in a different place. Maybe that's resources so that they can, I don't know, find a different way to learn, find a different way to explore who they are. We could be really creative with the resources that we have, but yes, I feel like we're kind of stuck in how it's being planned and managed. I don't know what all these solutions are, but I'm sure that there's a way that we could look at things more creatively, because there's a big section of the population who are neurodivergent and discovering that. This understanding isn't going to go away.
No. I mean, this is an issue that's never going to go away. Do apologise about that, ladies and gentlemen. Sorry about that. This is an issue that's not going to go away, unfortunately. And I don't think it should ever go away. It should never, ever go away. We should be talking about this. Mm. I mean, a lot of people out there are probably listening to this right now who don't realise. And to say that we've got to wait years and years and years for a diagnosis, it'll be too late by then. Well, not it's never too late, but it's a long, long time to wait just to find out if you have whatever you've got. And, you know, we need to find a system that can get more people to be checked out and find out what we have and what we don't have. I think that's what we need.
There's more resources and also more conversations.
Yes.
More conversations so that we can listen to each other. I don't need everybody to understand neurodiversity. I don't need everybody to decide that that's what they need to go and do. If that's, you know, if they do need to go and get a diagnosis, then let's support them to do that. But actually, if it's just having a safe space to explore, let me understand myself more. I work with so many young people and adults who have never had the opportunity to sit in a space and work out who they are with somebody that's got time to listen.
Yes.
And with a framework of understanding that there isn't a right, there isn't a wrong, there's just who we are as people. And, you know, so we have descriptions of neurotypical and neurodivergent. These are frameworks that we've given ourselves as human beings, but wouldn't it be great if we just all understood each other's experiences with less judgment and more like, oh, tell me more, I'm curious.
Yeah.
How we could all get along so much better, and there would be more people that would feel like they could be themselves more. Because
yeah.
I think for both you and I, in different ways, we've tried to be a certain way, realised that actually we're not, gone, oh, actually, I think I'm more like this.
Yes.
And relaxed into it and found way of life that feels more... more comfortable for who we are.
I mean, I used to keep my dyspraxia and Asperger's a secret. I find it hard at times to open to people. I didn't open up to people when I was at school. I thought I talked about my dyspraxia and Asperger's to my teachers, but I didn't talk about it to my pupils. Mm. Well, my classmates, should I say? And I think, even if I did tell them, the lack of understanding, it wouldn't have got me very far anyway. But when you tell the teachers, it's like, it's partly a weight lift off your shoulders because they know what you actually like. And we try and help the best they can, but when you've got a classroom of 30 other people, then it's going to be difficult for them, really. And I mean, I didn't have really much support at secondary school. I mean, I was struggling with lessons. I kept asking my classmates and stuff like that. And all I kept getting was that you should have been listening. Mm-hmm. It's not a case that I didn't listen. It was a case that I didn't fully understand.
Yeah.
And when I tried to tell the teacher that sometimes they don't understand. They said, like, you should have been listening and stuff like that. But, again, it's not a case of I haven't listened.
No.
It was a case of I didn't fully understand.
Yes, and I may have lots of questions about that. Like, I remember I would always put myself at the front of the class, partly because I wanted to see as though I was... I was always a people pleaser, always have been. So I would want, you know, if I can please the teacher, then maybe I'll get on okay and I won't get in trouble. That was always my fear, to get in trouble. But I also realised that I also wanted to be near the front so that I could be the person that puts my hand up and asks lots of clarification questions.
Yes.
And I am still that person. I will need to ask 1,000 questions about something, anything new. And I didn't realise why before, but I would often, I don't know about yourself, Chris, but it'd be like, right, I've asked a number of questions, I've maybe asked enough, I probably can't ask the same question again.
Sure.
I'll just be quiet.
Yeah.
Now. Whereas I'm still inside going, I still don't quite get it. But the more you understand how your brain works, the more you're like, oh, it's all right, I've just got lots of questions. And all three of my children, they absolutely are questioners. And I love that, because if there comes a point where you go, ah, I get it, then that blockage is gone and then you're away.
Yeah.
But if you're sat there, particularly as a child in a class going, I don't get it, well, you could have a whole class happen then from that moment on,
yes,
and think nothing else is going in because I didn't understand point B, so I'm not going to understand point Z because, yes, I'm still stuck on B. But if you keep putting your hand up and the teacher tells you, look, that's enough questions now, yeah, then what are you supposed to do with that?
Exactly. I mean, I don't think there's a problem. You should never, there's never enough questions that you can never ask. I mean, if you don't keep asking questions, then I don't think you're always going to find the answers that you're looking for. I mean, I think questions and questions and questions. I mean, there's always going to be questions, no matter what you talk about, you know. So, but if you stop asking them, you're not going to get anywhere.
And that's the brilliant thing about neurodiversity. That's why we need to embrace it in workplaces, in places of education, because a neurodivergent brain is always curious.
Yes.
And we need curious people, because curious people will be problem solvers. They'll find different ways around, you know, an issue. They'll want to find different solutions. They'll see things from a different perspective.
Yes.
They're always going to bring something to any team, any workplace, any scenario, really, because we've always been around. It's not like we've just popped out of nowhere.
Yeah,
we've always been here. It's just that now we have an understanding and a framework for that understanding. So let's embrace the questions. And I totally understand from a teacher's perspective, because my husband is a teacher, that there's only so much time you can give to every student. Like,
yes,
you say, 30 kids in that class, you can't let one child dominate the whole time because I've got lots of questions. So that's why the education system needs looking at, because,
yes, definitely,
some of those children might need more opportunity to ask more questions,
yes,
and some of them might need to learn in a different way. It's all okay. But I know, because I work with so many young people who are neurodivergent, and after a period of time they stop asking.
Yes.
And after a period of time they go inward, and then they start to label themselves as, you know, that they can't do it, that, you know, they're not able to think through things.
Yeah, and I mean, you just mentioned that there. I mean, a lot of people are frightened as well. And I think a lot of people are frightened to find more about themselves. And it's a shame, really. It really is. I want to say thank you. I mean, because we're quickly running out of time. And it's unbelievable. It's 10 to 1 already.
That went quick.
It really has gone quick. Jane, I want to say thank you for joining me. It's been an absolute pleasure. I mean, talking to you about this. I want to say to our listeners who have got questions about this, is there any information that people can get that people might want to find out more about neurodiversity?
It's a good question. I think it depends where you best like to find information out. There's so many brilliant things online now about understanding yourself. I'd say every social media platform you can find really helpful information. I particularly like to kind of read and digest in my own time, but, you know, you'll get people on all of the platforms sharing their experiences. That's,
yes,
maybe a good place to start, but I'd just be cautious with some of that,
yes,
because some people also go down the line of, well, it's only like this, or you must do that, or so it's just using it but in a safe way, so that maybe explore people that you can say, okay, that sounds a bit like me, I'd like to read a little bit more. But there's some fantastic books that you can read now about,
yeah,
neurodiversity, people sharing. A lot of celebrities sharing their stories too.
That's, yes,
it. I'd say the one that I found really affirming, quite upsetting, but really affirming at the same time, was the Inside Our Minds programmes that the BBC did.
Right.
Chris Packham has done them.
Right.
So he's done one on autism and one on ADHD. And I would get ready to feel like you're going to unravel as watching them, because I did. I cried all my way through, particularly the autism one, because it was so affirming. But so beautifully made.
Yeah.
Really nice.
I'll definitely have to watch that one. I haven't seen that one. But I know Chris Packham's got Asperger's.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be an interesting watch. So thank you for sharing,
mm-hmm,
that with me.
Mm-hmm.
Jane, it's been a pleasure. And let's get people talking about this.
Yes,
let's,
please,
definitely get people talking.
Thank you for the opportunity, Chris.
Well, thank you for coming. And it's been a pleasure. So we're going to play another song now. We're going to play Mr. Blue Sky Electric Light Orchestra.
It's a beautiful new day. Hey, hey. Thank you.